From the Windows, Doors, and More Studios, your one-stop shop for all your kitchen and bath needs. The Pat Miller Program. WoWo, 92.3 FM and 1190 AM. Depend on it.
And welcome back. Just very, very glad that you guys are with us. And I know there's a lot going on Capitol Hill because I flip on Fox News. Occasionally I turn on CNN. Don't shoot me. But, you know, you watch all this, and it's like everybody's thinking this is the last day on Earth. After this, everything's going to blow up. I don't believe anything until I go to Philip Wegman from Real Clear Politics. He's the only clear, sane voice in all of Washington, D.C. So let's talk to him as we like to do each and every week. Philip Wegman, good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks for having me, Pat. Yeah.
Now, I said you're the only, you know, clear voice in all of Washington, D.C., so that puts a little pressure on you, you know.
I'll do my best.
I know you will. If you'd like to follow what Philip says, not just about our topic today, but anything that he's ever done, you can go to realclearpolitics.com. That's realclearpolitics.com, and then click on the button for authors, and you'll see him right there. And it lists all of his articles going back. You've been with Real Clear how long?
It's going on 5 years at this point.
Wow. So they haven't, are they not listening to your stuff after you edit it? And do they? Why are we keeping this guy around? No, you're the best thing in media, in my view. You're the best thing going on in and around the Capitol, and I just think you need to know that.
Well, thanks, Pat. I appreciate it.
Now, he also will come to us quite often from the nation's capital, and he will do it from the White House. He is their White House correspondent, but I don't think you're there today.
No, not yet. There's going to be a briefing here in a bit. I'll try to make it over there.
Okay.
But, my focus for the last couple of weeks has been on Capitol Hill, and you and I texted about this a bit. Last Monday, I sat down with Speaker Johnson.
Oh, yes.
I was trying to come up with a few questions to try and gauge what he's thinking as he is facing a coup. Some members of Congress, particularly on his right flank, say that because of his support of Ukraine, because of his support for renewal of FISA and some of these spending bills that are $1 trillion and more, that he has got to go. And you and I were texting about, you know, what do you ask the guy about his fate? And we were able to sit down with him for about 30 minutes and write a profile.
Yeah. You know, I actually interviewed him one time, but it was like 3 or 4 years ago, and he was still, you know, on Capitol Hill representing the people of Louisiana. But I knew nothing about him beyond that, and he certainly had no idea at that point that he was going to be the speaker. I don't think I could get anywhere near him right now, so I'm glad that I've got you. So you had this sit down with him. Let me ask you this, totally non-political, because he was put forward as a man of faith, a man of some high level of integrity, basically a Southern gentleman's gentleman. Is that the take that you get when you sit down one-on-one with Speaker Johnson?
Very much so. And Pat, it's interesting that you interviewed him a few years ago because you were ahead of the curve for a lot of, you know, the news media here. He became speaker after three other Republicans were put up as replacements of former Speaker Kevin McCarthy. All
right.
Of them failed. And at a certain point, they decided to nominate Mike Johnson for this role because no one had anything bad to say about him.
Well, not anything bad, but sometimes some people didn't have anything good. I mean, a lot of people around me go, who's Mike Johnson? I mean, there was no recognition of who he was.
And so now he's been Speaker of the House for about 6 months. And the question is, will he survive or will he be toppled in D.C. before anyone can get to know him? Personally, no members of Congress really have anything bad to say about him. You know, he doesn't smoke, drink, cuss. But the question that I had for him was, does he fight? And the frustration that a lot of these members of Congress on the right have is, yes, they know that Republicans only control one half of one third of government, but they want Johnson to really, turn the screws on President Biden and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer. The problem, as Johnson sees it, is that he has a lousy hand, and there's not much that he can do in order to get concessions on things like border security and reducing government spending. So it was fascinating to sit down with this guy who, by all accounts, is, you know, very polite, very kind, also a man of faith.
Right.
But he's being tested right now.
Well, and, you know, and people say, well, yes, he's a fighter. He's a fighter. You can't take the position that he's got without being a fighter. But then your problem is the other members of the House think, okay, he's in there fighting for me, so he needs to go against the people I want him to go against, to the same level of vulnerability versus violence as I would want him to do. Okay, he's not a puppet where, you know, at any given point in time, every member of the House is supposed to put their hand up the backside and make his mouth move and make Mike Johnson do Pat Miller's fight. I mean, that's just not how this works.
Mm-hmm. And one of the things that that I learned a lot about as I reported out this profile is that Republicans, they have a real problem with authority. If you think about the last couple of speakers of the House, whether it was Kevin McCarthy, who was ousted, or Paul Ryan, who just up and quit because he was so exhausted, or John Boehner, who was run out of town, Republicans want more out of their leadership than they often get. And I think that what Johnson explained is, you know, he sees Democrats who very much vote as a unit, who are more collectivist in their thinking. He has seen how they all backed Nancy Pelosi and went for broke when Democrats had the majority. But Johnson explained that he sees Republicans as more rugged individualists who don't want to compromise as much. And the problem is that Johnson, as he came into this position, he took a government shutdown off the table, mm-hmm. which was really his trump card. And he said, we're not going to shut down the government. You know, he accepted some of these higher spending levels, but you know, get away with that possibility. And so without a government shutdown, you know, what he has had to do to try and muscle some of these bills through is rely on Democratic votes, not Republican ones. So whether it's funding for Ukraine or whether it is some of these individual spending bills, if you look at the breakdown, it's a coalition government where, yes, Johnson is the speaker, but he's going to Democrats for the votes he needs, not Republicans, because the Republican Party is still split.
Let me speak to that. You know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, who I, for the life of me, I still can't figure her out. I think somebody who has a PhD in psychology and wants to put somebody in a couch and ask them the right questions, they could build a career on Marjorie Taylor Greene. But, you know, when President Zelensky of Ukraine said, and this, a lot of this is hyperbole, but I get it. He's on the end and wants to receive. But if we, America, don't come across with a whole lot more military aid, his country is going to lose to Russia. So that's, you know, that way, if Russia ever overcomes and overtakes Ukraine, Zelensky looks at us and says, see, I told you. And then we all fight with each other because how can we do it? How can we not do it? She, Marjorie Taylor Greene, said, look, if all this happens, if we give even more aid to Ukraine, you're going to lose your job in Congress if this happens. Well, is that really what they want to do? Is that really what they want to have happen? And yeah. And I'm afraid yanking the chain on a speaker has now gotten to be a Sunday afternoon sport. It's too easy to do.
Yeah, I like how you described it, because it is a Sunday afternoon sport. Just one member of the House of Representatives right now can introduce something called a motion to vacate.
Yep.
And that basically triggers a snap election on the Speaker of the House. Because Republicans only control the House by a couple votes, that would spell trouble for Johnson. And I think you laid it out really well there. He's caught between a rock and a hard place. The majority of Republicans want to fund Ukraine's land war in Europe. And yet a not insignificant minority say, no, we shouldn't be doing this. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene has threatened the speaker that if he moves forward with Ukraine aid, and he did, and it passed, that she would trigger a motion to vacate. But she's also angry about a number of other things, not just the increased spending, not just the aid for Ukraine. When I sat down with Marjorie Taylor Greene in her office, she explained to me that Johnson, because he put through a funding bill that funded the Department of Justice, she was angry because she saw that as funding the special counsel investigation into former President Trump. And her argument was that the DOJ and FBI, they want Donald Trump to be in prison for the rest of his life.
Yep.
They want him to die in prison. And her argument was that Mike Johnson allowed that to happen. These members of Congress, you know, just it only requires one or two on Johnson's flank. They are very angry and they're very impassioned and they want to move fast and break things. But the question is, what happens afterwards?
Yep.
And the argument that Johnson and other Republicans are making is that if they did trigger a government shutdown or if there was chaos, that just makes it more difficult for Republicans to prevail in November when they are in a position to have the majority and get some of these things done that conservatives want to.
My personal view, the more you have what I'm going to call far-right Republican voices from the dark, okay, whether it's Marjorie Taylor Greene, whether it's Gates from Florida, who caused the downfall of the speaker a year and a half ago, all these voices. If this keeps happening, the Republicans are dead in the water this November in the election when we say, well, you can't put Biden back in because the Democrat Party is falling apart. They're not falling apart. Now, they're backing somebody in a direction I don't like, but they're unified in it. And that, to some people, that's all they need. You know, the Republicans don't know what they're doing and they're making a mess and blah, blah, blah. Well, I don't know that that's wrong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to get a split screen of what's happening on Capitol Hill on one television set. And then on the other, you're going to have Biden arguing that all of the Democrats are rowing in a specific direction. Conservatives and liberals have probably made up their mind already about who they're going to vote for in November. But for those moderate independents, those swing voters, they're going to be, judging both, the White House by their accomplishments and House Republicans by what's going on there. But I do want to note something, which I think Johnson doesn't get enough credit for. This is a man who is a product of the right. He was the former chairman of the Republican Study Committee, just like Jim Banks. This is someone who also used to work for Alliance Defending Freedom, the social conservative analog of the ACLU. This guy is very much a beloved son of the religious right. He's as conservative as we've had a speaker, and yet because of circumstances, because of tactical decisions, he's not able to see his personal preferences become law. And so you have this moment where the GOP is sort of, infighting, not necessarily just over policy, but over tactics. And, I was talking to one member of Congress who said that if this was a movie, yes, Johnson could go to the floor and through sheer power of oratory, convince the House of Representatives to change their mind and back him. But it's not a movie.
Yep.
And Republicans don't have the votes.
Yeah, he's a great guy, but he's not Jimmy Stewart. It's just not the same thing. Let me lean on you just a little bit. I want to pick that back up again where it was of the fact that he is a man of faith, the fact that he does want to do the right things and he's trying to. But I also want to talk to you, Philip, about whether or not he feels the hammer is going to fall on him as it has the ones before. Can I get you to hang on for a second?
Absolutely.
We'll be back straight ahead. This is Pat Miller here on Wolwell 92.3 FM and 1190 AM.
This is the Pat Miller Program on Wolwell 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and on the Wolwell app.
And welcome back. And as promised, he's still here. I think you're still there, Philip.
Hey, Pat. Ready to roll.
There he is. Okay. So you had this sit down with Johnson. First question. Was he aware of who you were? I mean, was he aware of just how conservative Real Clear Politics is? And do you think that's one of the reasons why he wanted to extend to you an interview?
Well, I'm not quite certain if that was the reason, but I had chatted with him previously, and my argument to his staff was basically the writing is on the wall. This guy could either triumph and pass legislation and keep his job, or if they pass Ukraine, he could not be long for this world, politically speaking, and that this was the moment he was going to be in the crucible. So make some time for me to chat with him while he's in the barrel.
So you had him in there. You felt, I think, probably that as best he could, he was probably being as open and as honest with you through the course of this discussion as he could be, right?
I think so. And he knows. I put it pretty straightforward to him. He knows that this Ukraine issue, not something that he necessarily, sought out, but something that he has to deal with, could cost him his job. And what's interesting is, he has evolved as, he became speaker. Previously, when he was just a rank and file member, he opposed more aid to Ukraine. He opposed a reauthorization of the foreign surveillance program. he told me years ago when he was just a backbencher that he was angry about how some of these spending bills came together, these 1,000-page bills that were dropped on members' desks, you know, just 24 hours before a vote. And so I asked him about all of those things and all of you know, his evolution, and I think he was pretty frank, right? Or forthright, excuse me.
Yeah. Frank's not here. Look, I know you're tired. You guys, do you feel like sometimes you get to the end of a news week in D.C. and as you're going out for dinner Friday night, you're like, okay, that was one of our worst battles yet, you know? And you're sitting there thinking, guess what? On Monday, we get to start it all over again.
Oh, it never ends.
Yeah, unending. So let me get to the question, because you've talked about the fact that some people, Marjorie Taylor Greene and others, are basically saying, you go with this, it could cost you your job. Other people are like, oh, let's don't jump the gun here. But what does he think? Were you able to put a direct question to him? Hey, you're doing this vote for Ukraine. Is this it? Are you going to start measuring for drapes in a different office? I mean, where does this lead?
So I asked him if he was prepared to lose his speakership over this vote, and he was pretty honest about the stakes. He knows that this could cost him his job. But one thing that's interesting about Johnson is because he was sort of drafted into this position after other leadership members went up and failed, he holds power pretty loosely. This is not something that is the highest aspiration in his life. And I think that Johnson knows that it might just be 6 months and he's done, or it could be a bit longer. The question is, who could actually replace him? Who could unite the caucus?
Yep.
I don't know if that person exists. And also, as of right now, he has the support of former President Trump, which is the very much the ace in the hole.
That's the linchpin right there. Because even to some people on the floor who really don't maybe care that much about Johnson, they do about Trump, and they don't want to honk off Trump between now and November.
And so when Johnson flew to Mar-a-Lago and talked with the former president about priorities for his next term, they had a press conference, and Trump came out and argued that Johnson was doing about as good as he could because of current circumstances. What's interesting is, Johnson is developing, he's building this relationship with Trump, and yet this is happening at the same time as one of Trump's, most ardent disciples, Marjorie Taylor Greene, is in Congress leading the revolt. And I think that this entire episode, it captures how Trump remains the head of the party, and yet at the same time, he's not even in control of all of the populist forces within the GOP. So when he is urging Marjorie Taylor Greene, Representative Thomas Massey, and some others to give Johnson a chance, it's not clear that even with all of the sway that he has, that he'll be able to hold them back.
Yeah, I've had a conversation with two different members of Congress, not from Indiana. I don't make that clear. But both of them Republicans, and both of them fairly conservative. And in essence, they said the same thing to me, in that I don't know that he's going to be able to hold on to his position. I don't want the position. I don't know that I disagree with him on any positions that he's held, but he better know that this is the one he's willing to go to the Hill for, because he's going to the Hill on this one. And 30 seconds left, Philip. So if this goes to some kind of floor vote, does Johnson survive?
So I asked Johnson about some of these Democrats who are promising to bail him out. And what he told me is that he has been approached by Democrats. They have told him not to worry about the motion to vacate. But he told me in his office that that's not something that's top of mind, and that's not something that he's trying to arrange. We will see if, in an ironic twist of fate, Democrats end up saving the most socially conservative speaker of the House in modern history.
Would that not be amazing? Hey, for your time today, Philip, thanks so much. I hereby give you the balance of the week off. Go home, rest, do whatever you need to do. But I look forward to having you on again next week, okay?
Thank you, Pat.
Thank you, my friend. Hang with us. More programming ready for you straight ahead right here on Wobo 92.3 FM, 1190 AM. We go to the newsmaker line again during the course of this show. Former and now running again to become the third district representative in the United States House of Representatives, Marlon Stutzman. Marlon, good afternoon to you, sir.
Hey, Pat, great to be with you on WoWo. I've been enjoying listening to you this afternoon on the radio again.
Well, you need to check your medication.
In the afternoon.
It's good to have you here. I got to be honest with you. I've been a little taken back from both directions, all directions, every direction of the contentiousness of this race this time. But then somebody said, well, you might want to check out what's going on. And they named for me a district in New Jersey and a district in New York City. So I went and I checked out a couple of their things that they have out in the press. And I listened to a couple of their ads. And holy cow, we look like an Aesop's fable compared to what's going on over there. Those people go for blood every time.
Talk about, you know, East Coast. I mean, you know, a lot of us Hoosiers aren't used to the Donald Trump personality as a president, and which I think is needed in Washington. And he's definitely a different type of a personality than us Hoosiers, who are a little more laid back. But I know what the other thing, the race down in the 5th district is pretty scrappy as well. So
yep.
I know that we're coming up on primary dates, and everybody's scrapping and trying to do the best they can to get their voice heard and win a race.
And aren't you kind of glad we're coming up on primary day?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, this has been over a year-long campaign for many of us. I announced on tax day last year, so April 15th,
yep.
I believe it was, and last year that I was running again. And so these campaigns are long, but it really comes down to this, you know, the last month. Every week is critical coming up to Election Day. And so we've got all of our plans are in place, and we have had a really strong campaign. I've been so proud of our team. We've got just the best team. Pat, volunteers and people that are helping us. And, you know, with all the negative campaigning, all the attacks that I've been taking for almost a month now, I've had a lot of people calling me saying, who is doing this? Who's behind all this? If somebody doesn't want you in Washington that bad, that maybe means I want you there. And we're actually picking up a lot of support from voters right now that are seeing these negative attacks, and they're now supporting me, or their vote is confirmed that they're supporting me because of these negative attacks.
Yeah, if you come out with an ad campaign where you're blasting or bombing your opponent ad infinitum, and you're just absolutely just, you know, scalping them, that's a very negative thing to some people, and they will take that and they'll actually run with it in the opposite direction. One of the things that I wanted to cover with you was, and I know we'll mention some things on some of the flyers and all that stuff, but the thing that gets me about it is with the timing of it. In my view, I think I first started receiving flyers at my home about two and a half weeks ago about you. And my first thought was, when you were first elected to Congress in what year?
2010.
Yeah, which was the same year I first went on WoWo. By the way, I didn't bring this up. Tomorrow is actually the 14th anniversary of my going on the daily program here at WoWo. And it's actually the same date that if you go back to the year 2001, that's when we started counting. And that will also represent my 24th year on WoWo. So it's way too long. I need to have a term limit.
No. No term limits on conservative talk show hosts.
Oh, is that right? But it's funny how time goes. If people had that much against you, and I'm sure that there are people that don't want you in office for whatever reason, but if it was a deep, and I'm not picking on any person going against you right now, this is a generic statement, and then I'll let you respond to it. If you were that horrible, if you were that much in the pocket of the liberals and the elites, if you were that much on the side of those that wanted to ingest drugs and mayhem in our country by going soft on the border, if that was really you, you would have never been elected and then reelected and then reelected. We would have gotten rid of you. The one that really gets me is I know that when you ran for the Senate, and it feels a lot like this election, Marlon, because then it was money that was coming from Kentucky, from our soon-to-be-retiring Speaker, the leader of the Senate for the Republicans, and he didn't want you in there, and there were a couple of others around the country that he didn't want in there because he didn't want to go up against the hassle of having conservatives like you in a body that he had to oversee where he was only going to have 100 members in the whole body instead of 435. That having been said, nobody said anything. And then when you lost that election for that very reason, I think it's important that people note that here in the 3rd District, in the district that you're running for again, the district that was always your home, even in the election that you lost, you won this district with 70% of the vote. That's practically unheard of.
Yeah, no, and you know what? I can't thank the folks of Northeast Indiana enough. I love home. I mean, you know, this is where we farm. This is where we built businesses. This is where we raised our boys. This is, it's such a, you know, I was at a meet and greet the other day and somebody said, you know, sometimes I feel like we live in a bubble here because people are nice to each other. People look out for one another. And it's still, you know, just those good, wholesome values that so many people here still practice. But, you know, of course, you know, Washington, you know, when I was there before, I did stand up to leadership. I did stand up against the Democrats. At that time, Pat, the amount of debt was much less than it is today. Now we're at $35 trillion of debt. But, you know, I'd like to just address the one mailer says that I voted to slash border funding. This is how Washington works. And this is why I want to tell you this, because Washington lies to us as the American people so many times. And this is a great example. Marlon Stutzman votes to slash border funding. And, you know, I'm letting all these illegals into the country. Well, it's just not true. The amendment that I voted for, Pat, was on Homeland Security.
Right.
And most funding, most budgeting in Washington, everybody just gets a 3% on average automatic increase. Just automatically every year they just plan on the rate of inflation, 3% automatic increase. So there was an amendment brought to the floor that cut a lot of the departments across the board, but this one was particularly related to border Homeland Security, and it cut the increase from 3% down to 1%. So it was a 2% cut of a 3% increase.
Right. It was not a cut from the current standard. It was a cut from how much more they wanted to go forward with more giving. And you back that up by 2%. It was still a 1% increase.
Exactly. And we didn't have the border problem that we're having today at that time, even though we did have a problem there. But you know what? When you're trillions of dollars in debt, everybody has to take a haircut. And that's why I would vote for every department to do less. They would get less money. They still got their small increase. But Pat, how many families here in Northeast Indiana, we just plan from year to year that, hey, we're just flatlining our budget. If things get tough, we flatline or we cut and actually go backwards in, you know, in our spending rather than increase. Washington doesn't hardly ever go backwards in spending on anything. And that's why we had an effort to try to at least just minimize and cut the increase from 3% down to 1%. And then you get political ads like this saying Marlon Stutzman voted to slash border funding. It's just disingenuous.
Well, yeah. And you know, and after a while, one builds on another one and one builds on another one. And they get so out of round and they get so wild that I expected to hear that Marlon Stutzman, when he was in the 3rd grade, kicked his teacher in the shin and he spit in his Sunday school teacher's tea at church. I mean, it's like there's just no end to it. And then I thought, boy, I hope they never go back through my life because I'll burn the hair off of them. So.
Yeah, no, and this is, again, the way Washington works. And, you know, we have been running a positive campaign about standing strong as a conservative. I'm focusing on the border wall, finishing the border wall. We've got to get the budget under control, you know, and we don't have good leadership in the White House. And then you look at the foreign, the issues going on around the world and foreign affairs, and we don't have strong leadership in the White House. And so we're focusing on that. And then, of course, you know, Winning for Women came in and they started, you know, sending all these mailers and running TV ads about, you know, things that just aren't completely accurate. You know, they take the truth and they twist it just enough to confuse us all. And I'm always happy to answer any question folks have.
Well, listen, here's the thing. Now, tomorrow night, you're going to be at the Republican dinner out at Cerruti's, correct?
Yes, sir.
The latest rumor that I have is that the lovely Mrs. Miller and I will both be out there, which means you don't have to worry about reporting to her or not reporting to her what I eat or what I don't eat, because she'll be there. So if you see me eating something that I shouldn't and you see her just letting me, let it go, okay? Just let it go.
Don't. I know you'll be on your best behavior.
Oh, you have no idea. I just... But, yeah, you've got no idea. Real quick question before I let you go. The boys are doing well?
They are. Peyton is wrapping up. He's got finals next week, and he's actually going to make it home on primary election day. And Preston is wrapping up his senior year, and he's going to be graduating at the end of May. It's hard to believe. Christy, she just keeps working on her music and the theater over at the Round Barn Theater, and she's just so talented, but everybody's pulling and helping on the campaign whenever there's opportunities, and it's been a lot of fun as a family, and we always enjoy these moments together.
Well, listen, I'm sure we'll see you rattling around out there tomorrow at Cerruti's, and I know that you'll probably be on. I'm guessing you'll be on. I'm not booking his show tomorrow, but I guess you'll probably be on at some point with Casey Hendrickson here on The Burning Truth. But I'll see you there. Kim and Christy, we need to let them talk, but not a lot, okay? Because
that's
whenever
right.
The two of them start talking together, you and I end up in hot water.
Yes, sir.
But listen, thank you so much for being with us today, Marlon. Best of luck to you, and for everybody, hang in there, okay?
Will do. Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
You bet. Thanks so much. Marlon Stutzman, we appreciate him being here. Got more coming up. Straight ahead.
This is the Pat Miller Program on WoWo 92.3 FM and 1190 AM and at WoWo.com.
And welcome back as we get closer to wrapping up hour number two on this Saturday of the Pat Miller Program. My thanks for Marlon Stutzman being on with us. My thanks for Philip Wegman being on with us. And again, I've told you guys this before. The politician guys are great. When I have the chance to have a music star or a movie star on, that's awesome. Kim happens to think that the best guest that I have ever had on my program is Philip Wegman. And so I'm thinking, I said something to Philip about the next time that I'm in D.C., maybe Kim will be with me, and then that way she can go to dinner with the two of us. And he said, okay, is that necessary? And I said, what do you mean? He goes, well, couldn't Kim and I just have dinner alone? So I think he's pretty sure that he doesn't really care about it. I'm just teasing. No, always appreciate Philip Wegman. He is an incredible individual. Don't forget, Jen Sylvester was on with us in that first hour. And as always, if you need to rehear part of a show we did, or if you missed an hour, or you want to hear it all because you missed the whole thing, or you heard a great interview and you said, oh, my friend from church needs to hear this, remember, you can go to wowo.com. You need to go to the podcasts, and you can pull up the Pat Miller Program, the Saturday program, and it's in there, hour one, hour two, hour three, for every week we're on. And so if you want to hear, for example, Philip Wegman, he is the first interview in hour number two. There, I've helped you out. This is going to be our last segment in hour two, and I want to talk a little bit about the Supreme Court. Some people are going absolutely bananas over the Supreme Court. How come? Well, they just ruled 6-3 to protect kids. Now, does that sound like a bad thing to you? They have ruled to protect kids, and the radical left is seething. They're spitting foam out of the corner of their mouth. Talking to a Democratic activist is getting harder every day. They pretend as though up is down and down is up and 2 + 2 = 5. But conservatives continue to push their agenda. And this law was just upheld by the Supreme Court of the United States. When the Supreme Court ruled 6-3 in favor of protecting young children, the radical left fell into a rage. Over the past several years, the Democrat Party has been pushing an evil agenda on children in our country. Under the guise of health care, they are seeking to confuse children about their gender identity and perform permanent life-altering procedures to attempt to change their biological sex. Now, let me say it again. Under pretending that it's health care and seeking to confuse children about gender identity and perform permanent life-altering procedures, they're doing this. They attempt to change their biological sex. And the Supreme Court said no. Some states like Idaho are standing in the way to protect the innocence of our young people. Governor Brad Little last April signed the Vulnerable Child Protection Act there in Idaho to make it illegal for doctors to perform chemical castration and sex change surgeries on people under the age of 18. Now, what's weird is as I read that statement, I get to the end of that and I go, well, who would fight that? Who would fight taking somebody under the age of 18 and doing sex change operations on them? Who would stand in the way of that? Well, obviously, in Idaho, everybody on the left. And I'm finding out more and more and more that those that identify themselves as hard right or radical leftists in the state of Indiana, they would be right there too. Under House Bill 71, doctors in Idaho would be held criminally liable and face lengthy prison time if they were found to have provided so-called gender-affirming care to a minor. That made Idaho the 12th state in the country to move to protect kids from this evil agenda. But the Democrats are fighting through the courts, and the Democrats think they can win. In December, a federal judge appointed by former President Bill Clinton. I want you to listen to me. I never had. Yeah, that Bill Clinton. He put in Justice Windmill, and he issued a temporary injunction blocking the bill before it became law in January. The order was made after two families with transgender-identifying kids sued Idaho, claiming the law violated the 14th Amendment. You know the 14th. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process, nor deny to any person within its jurisdictions the equal protection of the laws. The amendment that went in there, the 14th Amendment in 1868, is one of the Reconstruction Amendments. Well, the 14th Amendment's role, according to the judge who's trying to overcome this, according to his understanding, he said that the 14th Amendment's primary role is to protect disfavored minorities and preserve our fundamental rights from legislative overreach. The judge compared transgender kids to newly freed slaves, people of color, and interracial couples. The authors of the 14th Amendment fully understood and intended that the amendment would prevent state legislatures from passing laws that denied equal protection of the laws or invaded the fundamental rights of the people. That's what Windmill said. The Democrats said this is a significant victory. But now the radical left is furious after the Supreme Court ruled to overturn the preliminary injunction and kill their evil agenda to mutilate children. This is the first thing on our docket next week when we get together, because we do this every Saturday. So I'll see you then. Coming up right after the next break, we've got 3rd District Congressman Jim Banks. He'll be on with a special guest, and that happens right after this break here on WOWO 92.3 FM, 1190 AM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.